Welcome to Eastlake Church. Glad you're here. Glad if you're watching online. Second week of How to Raise Amazing Kids. Last week we answered the question, what's our role as parents? This week the question is, how do we correct our kids? And we've had sort of a theme from last week. I'm going to read it to you. It's in your notes. Our primary role is to love and train our children. It's kind of our thesis. The whole series revolves around the idea that as parents, we love and train our children. And check it out from last week, but let me just sort of give you a review on it. We talked about that our children go through different phases, and we have to have a role that matches each phase. So everything's always changing. And by the way, what goes around comes around. We start by wiping their rear end, and someday they'll wipe ours. Hopefully that's a long ways away for you, but it's coming. And so you have these different phases and these roles. And the first phase, like about, you know, baby to 5 years old, that's the caregiving phase. We're caregivers during that role. We do lots and lots and lots for our kids. We change their diapers. We feed them. We make sure everything's okay. We do lots and lots of need meeting in this phase. When they're babies all the way up to about kindergarten, that's the phase we're in, just meet a lot of needs. Now, there is something that we're training them, though. In that phase, it's important that people start to learn that they can't always have their way, because babies believe that the universe revolves around them. I mean, it's all about them, and everything has to be how they want it, and they just that's just how they are. And so we've all been around. I mean, they cry, and they're cranky, and they fuss if they don't get their way. And guess what? Do you know any adults in your life that when they don't get their way, they're cranky and they're fussy and they complain? They think, if I just cry enough, I'm going to get my way. So just check in. Maybe at that phase in their life, nobody was working with them to be able to train them and teach them. You don't always get your way. So in this phase, we're training. Our kids have to learn. You'll have to deal with this. You won't always get your way. Now, the second phase is the ruler phase, which sounds kind of weird. It's like ruler, you know, but here's the thing. Homes and families are like little kingdoms, and your children are not smart enough, they're not wise enough, they don't have enough experience to rule the kingdom, although they will try. You're the ruler. It defaults to you. Remember, we talked about a lot of us are pushing back on that authority because we've been around kings and queens and step-kings and queens and parents that they misuse their authority. And so we're still reacting and rebelling against that. But here's the thing. During this phase, it's very important that we teach our children how to deal with authority, because that's a part of life. And authority can be a great thing. Authority can be something that covers us and is fair and helps us with our life. And we're training our children. There is authority, and you have to deal with authority in this phase. Then there's a coaching phase. So like from about kindergarten to about 12 years old, you know, there's this phase where, you know, you have to have authority. And by the way, I mentioned that I talked to a psychiatrist at the University of Utah, and we were talking about that it's this phase that sets up the teen years. She works with teenagers a lot, and a lot of the teenagers she's talking with are struggling because they have thoughts of suicide. And these are the children that she's working with, teenagers. And what they're finding out is during this phase of authority, when there's no authority for the child, when there's no rules, no boundaries, they interpret that as nobody is interested in me. Nobody cares enough about me. And then so we were calling them floater kids. They become teenagers and they just sort of float around and there's like no boundaries and they lack value. Now, the next phase, the coaching phase, that starts at about like 13 years old. And you're not ruling anymore. Most parents, you know, find out that this is a crazy time in their life when they have teenagers. Very, very difficult. And often it's because it's hard to shift phases. We want to keep caring about them. We, you know, run their little lunch down to the school when they forget and bring their PE clothes and give them allowance for doing absolutely nothing. And, or we're going to rule them with an iron fist. And listen, when they're teenagers, it's over, Rover, if you're still trying to rule them, because they're not going to respond to that any longer, because they can see the finish line. They know in 4 or 5 years, I'm out. So what teenagers will do is they'll just hide their life from you. Here's the big question. How much of their private life will you get to be involved in? I had this idealism as a parent. My sons are going to tell me everything. They'll keep me involved in everything. It's like, yeah, right. Of course not. But the goal is to be involved because, listen, they're making choices. Important choices start to come up in the teen years. And we're coaching during this time. Choices shape our entire life. And this is when you have to let your teens start to feel some of the weight of their decisions. So they'll start to figure out, oh, life's about choices. I don't get to have lunch today because I forgot mine. You start to coach them. And the nice thing is during this phase, as you're making choices and decisions as a teenager, but you have a coach right alongside to be there for you. But coaches are on the sidelines. Kids are in the game. Remember we said, you had your shot at a science project. Don't make theirs. Just let them live. They got to feel their choices. And the last one is the advisor. That's the phase I'm in right now. And as a young parent, I thought it was going to go on and on and on and on and on. Are these diapers ever going to stop? And just, you know, you're just going to go. Now I'm here at this point, and I realize later is longer. Do you know all those phases? They just whiz by. You think you're going to forever be the ruler and always trying to talk to them. It's not that way. Because now I'm an advisor. I'm only included if I'm invited. I have the influence that my children grant me now. And this will be the longest phase. This phase is the phase I'll be in for the rest of our lives together. I'll be an advisor to them. Here's what you're trying to get across during this phase. No matter whatever happens, I'll always be there. You're trying to train them and reinforce something in their lives. No matter whatever occurs, any choices that are made, no matter what happens, I will always be there for you. So that's what it is to have roles. And, you know, as they go through these phases, we have to adjust our roles, which means we adjust our correction. But one thing doesn't change, and it's the purpose of our correction. And it's the big idea this weekend. Look in your notes. The big idea, we correct our children so they can overcome self-centeredness. So we started East Lake Church not too long ago. It's a church for everybody. We want everyone to be able to come here, regardless of your background or religion. And we want the talks to be practical so you can use them in everyday life. So invite your friends, and here's some things that can help them in everyday life. And here's one of them. There's a reason why we correct children. It's so they can overcome self-centeredness. Because when I think about my relationships or problems I have at work or something comes up financially or I just have a bad attitude, I can always sort of track it to self-centeredness. When I get off track, it's usually because I start to think the universe revolves around me. I mean, we come out of the womb that way. Children have to be trained to not be self-centered. I mean, when they come out of the womb and they think the universe revolves around them and, you know, it's only schedule matters is them, they don't think anybody else's concerns. Babies never think to themselves, when is a computer? I want to have a convenient time to poop for my parents. I see Dad over there. He looks a little busy. I don't think I'll load up my diaper until he looks like he's ready for me to. Oh, they do whatever they want. They just blast away. They don't care. They cry and they want their food. They're not concerned for anybody. And we're all here about only them. Hey, listen, children, they don't grow out of patterns. They grow into patterns. And they have to be trained to not be self-centered. Now, here's what the Bible says about it. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on earth. Now, there's two words here I want to focus on, the word obey and the word honor. Obey gets to the actions and honor gets to the attitude, and those are the areas that we correct in. And as you listen to the talk, you may think, well, I don't have any kids or I don't know about this. Well, just reflect on your own life. How do you do when it comes to obeying, and how do you do when it comes to honoring? How's your actions and how's your attitude? Because these are the areas that we're correcting in with our kids. When our children can learn to obey, things go well for them because their actions are right. And by the way, we don't want our children to make good choices so they look good, or so we look good, or our family looks good. We want our children to make good choices so they'll benefit from the right choices. The more choices I make that are good, the more I benefit. And then I'm motivated by the benefit of a good choice. Listen now, Jesus doesn't punish us when we make wrong choices so we won't do the wrong thing again. That's not how he is. He would much rather us make a good choice, experience the benefit, and then go, man, I would much rather have that benefit, and so I'm going to make a good choice again. And so when our children learn to obey, What they're learning is right actions. Now, our role is always through the phases is to try to help them do the right actions. And by the way, when you learn to obey and you do the right thing, one of the benefits is you have a clear conscience. And when you're a kid, I mean, you know, you start to look at life this way. Well, if I can just figure out a way of not getting caught. And so even when you do something wrong and you pull it off and you don't get caught and nobody sees it, here's what catches me by surprise. I have a guilty conscience and I don't know what to do with it. Nobody caught me. I know I did the wrong thing, but I didn't get in trouble. But what do I do now with my conscience? I can't turn it off. You know, as you grow up, you'll do all kinds of crazy things to get away from your conscience. And what the Bible's saying is that if you do what's right, you don't have to. You have a clear conscience. And honoring your parents gets to the attitude. Now normally, as parents, we have like kind of like a two-step process that we correct our children. So here's a picture of it right here. You see the wrong behavior, and then you do some kind of a technique to get the right behavior. So like there it is right there. That's where a lot of us live right there. And that works in that first phase with babies up to about kindergarten, maybe a little bit into elementary school. You just see the wrong behavior, you apply some kind of pressure, you do something, whatever it is you do to correct your kids, and then they do the right behavior, and that's fine. Because if they make right decisions, they have the benefit of having a clear conscience, and they get the benefit of right choices, and that's fantastic. But that doesn't work as they get older, because then you have to start to deal with their attitude. Little kids, you don't really deal much with their attitude. You just show them, hey, that's not the right thing to do. Here's the wrong thing to do. And, you know, and if you don't do it, then you're going to have to sleep in the snow. And so they're like, oh, okay. And so, like, they do it, right? But when kids get older, they can do the right behavior, but their attitude never changes. And so they don't change. You have to make a shift as kids get older. You see wrong behavior, you got to start to deal with the attitude. There's a little third grade boys in class, and he's just goofing off. Teacher's like, stop, Billy, stop, goofing off. Finally, she says, Billy, get your chair, take your chair and put it over into the corner and sit it. You're going to sit in your chair over there. You know, so Billy, you know, gets the chair and puts it over his head. He's screwing around, everybody's laughing. He puts it over in the corner and he turns around and he just glares at the teacher. He doesn't sit down. And the teacher's like, Billy, I told you to sit in that chair. And he just looks at her. She says, all right. And she walks over to the phone that goes down to the office, and she says, I'm going to call the principal. And he's going to come down here and have a talk with you because you didn't sit in that chair. Billy just, boom, he's in the chair. So she's thinking, uh-huh. She walks over and says, see, I told you you were going to sit in that chair. And Billy just started smiling at her. She said, what's so funny? What are you smiling at? He says, I'm standing on the inside. And kids can do that. We think that they've changed because they changed their behavior, but they haven't. Jesus talked about it. Look what he says here. He says, you wash the outside of your cups and dishes while the inside there is nothing but greed and selfishness. You blind Pharisee. First clean the inside of the cup, and then the outside will also be clean. So keep it in mind as we talk about some different ways that correction happens, the different parts of correction. Here's the first one. Number one is clarity. Okay, so we'll just walk through them. You're correcting your children. You're making sure that they're going to be able to experience the benefit of right choice. And the very first one is clarity, and here's why. Because if you're not clear with your children, they won't know what their choices are. Children have to realize that they have a choice, and if you're not clear about what you desire from them, they have no idea that they're even making choices. It's so easy for kids when you go to them and you say, well, why did you do that? You weren't supposed to do that. And it's like, I don't know. You're like, well, you should know. And listen, if you've never told them, how would they know? Clarity is when your children know exactly how the home is run and what the rules are and what's going to happen if they don't follow the rules. Clarity makes certain that you're operating on the basis of choice and not emotion. Now, here's some ideas on clarity so you can make sure things are clear. Just here's some things. Tell them what they can do and tell them what they can't do. Tell them what will happen if they don't do it and tell them what will happen if they will do it. And just leave that up for a while. So how would work be if it looked like that? had that kind of clarity? Did you have that kind of clarity in your family as you grew up? How are you doing providing that kind of clarity? God's pretty good about that. He gave us a whole Bible. He put everything in writing so we could be clear with Him. So two moms, they've got their Ted and Tom. They're going to the park to play, and they're sitting on the bench. Lots of moms and single dads running around, and these kids are all playing in the park, and all these crazy kids. And so Ted gets up on the slide, and he jumps off the top of the slide, right into where a bunch of kids are playing. You know, he just parachutes down, superhero. And his mom sees it, and Elizabeth just comes flying off the bench. She's like, "Ted, what are you doing? These kids could have been hurt. Why do you always have to be a show-off? When are you ever going to learn? Listen, if you want to see me really get mad, you better stop." And then she goes back to the bench and she tells her friend, "I can't believe that kid. He's just like his dad." Here's the problem. There's no clarity for Ted. All Ted knows is that if he does something on that slide again, his mom is going to get excited. He might be the kind of guy that likes to see that. She may have actually motivated him. "Ooh, wonder how mad we can get mom this time. It doesn't mean I'm not going to be able to slide. I'm still sliding now." Kids are pretty smart that way, and so are you. So like 10 minutes later, the other little kid, Tommy, he's like on the swing, you know, swing, 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 swing. And he goes flying out of the swing, and he lands in a big bunch of kids. His mom, Marie, she just gets up and she walks over. She says, "Tommy, that's not okay. If you do that again, you won't swing for the rest of the time we're at the park. Is that clear?" Now that's clarity. He knows that's not okay. And if I do it, this is what's going to happen. Here's what it goes on for me a lot of times. I just get so emotional and embarrassed. Because you see all the other parents are going, "I can't believe that he did that." It's such a reflection on me. So my emotion comes out, but here's the problem. My kid doesn't have any clarity to adjust to. And here's why it's so important to have clarity with kids, is that they need to be responsible for their choices, but it's not fair to hold them responsible for something that they never knew. So, you know, you go into your teenager's room and you say, "Listen, I want you to clean up that room. It's a total mess. You're not even leaving this house until that thing is cleaned up, man. It looks like a science project." You don't see, you go out and there's no clarity. But if you walk in and you say, "Listen, I want you to clean your room today and it needs to be done by 4:30. That means everything is picked up off the floor and your bed is made. And if you do that, you can have a friend over. Get it?" Wait till your kids start driving. If you haven't been there yet, that's crazy. "Dad, can I borrow the van?" It's like, "Oh, okay." Real clarity. It's a privilege to use mom's car. And if you don't bring it back by replacing the gas and have all your junk out of it, you won't use it again for 7 days. Are you clear? See, that's clarity. So I'm just saying, the very first thing we're trying to do is we're trying to create an environment where our children have clarity. So when we correct them, they know what they're being corrected for, and they know what their choices are. Now, the second thing, turn your notes over, is consistency. Consistency, you know, trying to make sure that your kids see the same thing over and over and over again, that you don't bail. And this is one that I had a really super hard time with when I was with my kids when they were young. There was a certain place they were supposed to be able to ride their bike. And so, you know, my son takes off on his bike, off he goes, and he goes right past the place where he's supposed to ride his bike. You know, I see the whole thing, you know. And it's always that great moment when they turn around and they realize you've watched the entire thing. So they get about 15 seconds to think of their story as they're coming up, you know. "The brakes didn't work, you know, someone was chasing me, I saw a ghost," you know, whatever it is. And so, like, they come back, you know, and you're like, "Hey, you went past the area where you weren't supposed to ride your bike. Now go put your bike away." And here comes the lip. "Dad." You know, in the body language, you know, like a slinky. "Well, everybody else riding their bike farther than me. And you didn't tell me about Dad, my only day off." Now, my wife is awesome at that. She's like, "I care, put your bike away." You know, but I am a nice person. And so I'm like, oh, well, son, come on. Now, you know daddy has to do this, man. I'm going to look like a wimp in front of mom if I don't. Now, listen, you've got to put your bike away because you knew you weren't supposed to go past that lion statue down there. You know that. Dad, I'll never, ever do it again. I'm like, I know you won't, son. Give me a hug. Go ride your bike, big guy. You know, and here's the danger. And catch this. When you're not consistent with your children, here's what you train them. I can get away with it when I do something wrong. And that's a really dangerous attitude. When you're an adult and you think, I can get away with it, nothing's gonna happen, that's dangerous. See, our children need to learn by consistency that consequences do happen. You gotta have that. You don't want your children thinking, I could do something wrong and I won't get caught. I can do something wrong and nothing's going to happen. Every time I send him back on his little trip on his bike, feeling like he loves me, I put in motion an attitude. When you do something wrong, nothing happens. And listen, that's not the world we live in. Kids got to get that when you do the wrong thing, something does happen. Consequences occur. So you have to be consistent. And you know what? That's the way God loves us. I know sometimes when you make choices and you think, God's rubbing my nose in it and he doesn't like me and he's making... It's not anything like that. Jesus never rubs your nose in anything. And when you make a bad decision and it seems like God is punishing me, normally what it is, you're just going through the natural consequences of your bad choice. And I would imagine his heart is broken to watch it. But he consistently will let it occur, so we'll understand consequences are real. So be consistent. Number three is consequences. And the thing I want to say here, a few things. Number one, they have to be immediate. Very, very quickly, you have to make your consequences. You don't want your children sitting and stewing very long in a wrong attitude. I mean, I know, we're tired, and you get exhausted, and you just don't want to bring the consequences right away. It's so much easier just to say, you know, you go to your room and stay in there until I come and tell you what the consequence is. You know, and then you put in a movie because you're burned out, and you stay out there for like 4 hours. You know, it's like, I got a break, and it's justified, you know. But guess what? They're sitting in there, and they're still stewing in the exact same attitude. Nothing's changing for them. This is why consequences need to be immediately, because we can train our children that they can very quickly change their attitude and their actions. They can do that fast, and that's important in life when you're an adult, when the work sucks and your finances tank and your attitude is struggling. In life, when you start to get overwhelmed, in life, if you've been trained as a child, I can change my attitude fast. That's a huge help as an adult. I can change my actions very quickly. That's a huge help. And it starts in the phase of parenting to bring immediate. One time Clarice was at the store. She had a whole grocery cart of groceries. I mean, she's at the market now, and she's rolling along. She has one of my sons with them. And, you know, he probably needed a nap, complain, I want to do this, I want that. You know, they want every single thing in the world they see, you know, and they're reaching for stuff. And she finally gets to the place where she's going to check out, and he just will not quit. He just, you know, complain, wah, wah, wah. So she finally, when it came up to be her turn, she told the checker, she said, listen, we lived about 3 blocks from this store. I've got to take my son home and discipline him right now. I'll come back and get all my groceries. And throws his little butt out of the chair, and boom, she takes him home. And he was disciplined and corrected, and his attitude gets right. And then she came back to the store. I know this seems extreme. She comes back to the store with now the little angel in tow, and she paid for the groceries and took him home. That takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of work, but you know what my son learned through that? I can very quickly change my attitude. I can change my actions fast. I don't need 4 years of counseling. I can do it right now. And that's why you have to be consistent. And that's why you have to bring consequences immediately. You have to bring them. You don't want people thinking, you know, I can cut corners and get away with it. Two guys are electricians, and one guy is the guy that goes up the pole. He's always cut corners and, you know, sort of get the job done, always wanting to get everything done really quickly. So he's like going up the pole, and he started to work right away. And his buddy says, well, wait a minute, man, let me get the power turned off. He goes, oh, it's no big deal. And he just starts, he said, it is a huge deal, man. Let me get the power. Bam! Flew him right, he touched something, flew him right off the pole. And he didn't die, but I mean, he was hurt. How come? Thought he could get away with it and found out he couldn't. Consistency and bring the consequences. They need them. Now, here's the last thing, and I think it probably is the anchor that holds it all together, is a clean slate. Some parents have such a difficult time giving their children a clean slate. It's so important to let them off the mat. After they've done it and after you've gone through the consequences, you have to be the person that gives them a clean slate that they know. And in my family, this was always done with our children with tons of acceptance and love. Always lots and lots and lots and lots of hugs and hugs after the correction time. Tons of them. So they would know this. Nothing has changed between us. You know why it's so important that your children have a clean slate? The most important time for them to know that you love them is after they screw up. That's how Jesus is with me. When I make a huge, huge mistake and it's all in the toilet and it's really, really bad, that's when I need to know nothing has changed between us. You still love me. That's what a clean slate does. And I know sometimes they revert to old behavior and you get scared and you're like, I don't know what's going to happen. Or you say too much. It's like, I'm so frustrated. Where's your pitchfork and horns? You got to be a devil. I mean, how could you do this? You know, and it's frustrating and we say too much. But here's the thing. Find a way to make sure kids can't have it held over their head. I remember one time someone in my family, I was raised with my grandparents, and that was my father figure, and so not my dad, who I didn't know, but I was around somebody that knew him, and I can't remember if it was my mom or someone said, you're just like your father. And listen, in my family, my father was not looked up to because he was never there. And that, when those will hang over. What I've always appreciated about my wife is she has a relentless ability to go to the children and say, I'm sorry I said that. Would you forgive me? It's amazing. I've seen her model that since they were old enough to understand language. I mean, to go to the kids and say, you know, I should have never said that. And I got frustrated, and that's my fault. And by the way, we had a rule in our family that we never disciplined out of anger. Which means sometimes we just had to put it on pause. You want to bring the consequence as quickly as you can, but if you're angry, put it on pause. Because listen, when you're angry with your children and you discipline them, they think you don't like them. And that's not the point. It's their attitude or their behavior. You love them. But if you're angry when you do it, they interpret that as you don't like them. So if you get angry, you got to take a time off. Or if you're a single parent, it can be difficult. You have to take a time out. If you have another parent, then you pass the baton. You say, listen, you try this because I'm just like seeing red. I'm so mad. And don't beat yourself up for getting mad because these little kids, you know, selfish little balls of love, oh, I know, they're so cute when they're sleeping. But when they're awake, they're a challenge. You know, and like when you get angry and you're like, I'm such a bad person. I got angry. No, you're not. You're normal. But don't discipline and correct in anger, or they'll think that my parents don't like me. Clean slate. Now, let me say something during this series, because sometimes it's the parents that need a clean slate. This last year, quite surprisingly for me, was a year of reflection on my parenting. I just kind of moved along through all the parenting years. I didn't do a lot of reflecting. I didn't give myself a lot of scores. I just moved along. And for whatever reason, this last year, certain circumstances hit, and I found myself contemplating and sort of looking back on all the years of parenting. And some of it was great. I mean, as I looked back on some of it, I thought, man, you know, coming from my background, that wasn't, I was really happy and pleased to see some of the ways I parented my children. But I also saw some stuff I did not like. You know, when you reflect on your parenting, I wasn't able to do all the things we're talking about today. I was unclear. I wasn't consistent. At times, I didn't bring the right consequence, and I didn't always give them a clean slate. And I'm not talking about like 6 years ago. I'm talking about recently in my life. As I looked back on my life as a parent, I saw a lot of things that were disappointing and discouraging to me. And I saw lots of things that I think my two children had to go through that the only reason they had to go through is because I was the dad. I could have done a lot better. And as I reflected on myself as a parent, here's what I realized. I need a clean slate. It was very difficult. And I did the best that I possibly could, but I still feel gunky, and there's still certain things. And here's the problem. You see something, and you have a better perspective now, and you look back, and you go, God, I wish I could do that again, but you can't. Go back. Now, here's the good news. To have a clean slate, you don't have to go back. Jesus can give you a clean slate. That's what he does. You look back on your parenting, and you realize, man, there's some things I wish I would have done very, very different. And I'm like saying, me too. Several times this year. And I just thought, damn, blew that one. And I had to approach the Lord for a clean slate. Do you know why a lot of times people in our lives aren't given a clean slate? Because we don't feel like we have a clean slate. But if I have a clean slate, then I can give a clean slate. And the big idea on your notes is our goal is their maturity. And that's what it's all about, is just to help our children become more mature. And listen to this part of the Bible and see if this would be like an awesome description if this was your child or it was you. Be sincere in your love for others. Hate evil. Hate everything that is evil. And hold tight to everything that is good. Love each other as brothers and sisters and honor others more than you do yourself. Never give up. Eagerly follow the Holy Spirit and serve the Lord. Now, the front part, you think, man, I'd take a kid like that. But the last part, never give up, eagerly follow the Holy Spirit and serve the Lord, that's us as parents. And the way you never give up is you stay close to Jesus.